Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later in the program, Robert DeWalt is going to be here sitting in for Robert Knott, and the author Lois Gilbert will join us to talk briefly about her new book. And Linda Siegel will join us with the last legislative update of the legislative session. Right now, I'd like to welcome Rabbi Larry Bach. He is visiting from El Paso, where he has a congregation there, and he's here to do a workshop called Creating a Community Vision, A Journey to Change from the Inside Out. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
So you are originally from Albany, New York.
Yes, I am.
You found yourself having a congregation in El Paso, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big move. How did you find yourself in Texas?
That's where the job was. Actually, when we came to El Paso in 1998, it was centrally located. It's not centrally located for too many people, but at the time, my wife's sisters were in school in Austin and in Tucson, so it seemed like a good place to go for a couple of years while they were in college and be close to them. And as it's turned out, we've just fallen in love with the Southwest and stuck around. And I just finished 10 years there, and I'm planning on being there for many more, I hope.
So you are part of a movement that we have talked about a little bit on this program before, which is really looking at issues and taking action in issues of social justice in the Jewish community.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that look like in El Paso?
In El Paso, Temple Mount Sinai, the congregation I serve, was among the founding members of an organization called Border Interfaith, which we established 7 or 8 years ago now, and really came into its fullness. It was in the works for a couple of years before that, and it is a member of a network called the Industrial Areas Foundation. Up here in northern New Mexico, you have Albuquerque Interfaith, part of the same network, and there is talk about trying to create something like that here in Santa Fe. What it is a group of congregations that harness their power collectively, the power of their members.
Catholic, Jewish, Protestant, Buddhist, anything.
Anyone who can come to the table and work in common cause, absolutely.
And so what kind of things do you work on together?
We have worked in El Paso on immigration. We've worked on having a sane approach to development that protects our arroyos and make sure that neighborhoods don't get flooded, which has been our history in El Paso in recent years. We have worked on environmental issues, and we've worked on getting water and gas and light brought into some of the colonias, some of the unincorporated areas of our county where neighborhoods have sprung up that have been underserved.
It's interesting that the environmental movement has really come to the attention of churches and congregations. That's a fairly recent development compared to some of these other things.
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is that? So with the environmental stuff, you get together, just as one example, we'll go into immigration in a moment, but you get together with these other interfaith leaders and say, let's do a project.
I wish it were that. I wish we had the luxury of sitting back and thinking about that. In this case, we got together and said, oh my God, our neighborhoods are flooding. In July 30th and August 1st of 2006, a low pressure system just came and sat on top of El Paso, right on top of our mountains. Very unusual weather pattern. It rained, basically a monsoon that didn't last for an hour, but lasted for 9 or 10. And we had water running through the streets of neighborhoods downstream from all of this new development up on the mountains. And we had people's homes condemned. We had people's, cars washed away, whole neighborhoods that really had to relocate. And so it was a matter of, utter emergency and necessity. And because our organization was already in place, the community turned to us. Congregations in those neighborhoods said Border Interfaith is the vehicle through which we're going to get things done. One neighborhood, a neighborhood called Moad, Moad Avenue, which had been built on a landfill and really should never have been built, but it was, and it flooded casually, during summer monsoons. In this particular flood, really just... it became clear it was impossible to live there anymore. And so the city came to buy folks out. And of course, the city's opening position is, let's see, you know, how we, you know, how little we can get away with giving folks. And had there not been an organization like Border Interfaith working, I won't say working on, you know, on behalf of, but working alongside these people because they were part of the organization, I don't think they would have gotten what ultimately came to pass, which was full replacement value and relocation money for everyone in that neighborhood.
So you end up being sort of mediator negotiators.
Mediator is a great word. I think for all of these organizations, what they are mediating institutions. You know, it used to be, if you go back 50 or 100 years, that parishes and congregations and union halls were the places where people found community. Nowadays, community is harder to come by, and what organizations that are part of the Industrial Areas Foundation seek to do is rebuild community through relationships and then harness that community and bring its power to bear.
We're talking to Rabbi Larry Bach. So you are right across this river from Ciudad Juarez.
Yes.
And that is a place that has just exploded in recent years. I used to just drive down there, park the car in El Paso, walk across the bridge, have mm-hmm. lunch, hang out, be in a nice Latin American city where people aren't, you know, where people are speaking Spanish. It's just a way to go abroad by, you know,
right.
in your car.
Right.
Do people still do that?
People are not doing that. No.
They're not.
No, it's not in this, in the same way. I know, you know, many folks that, you know, that I know of who used to do that. I never did it very much myself, but would go occasionally, and I haven't gone in a couple of years. And other folks,
it's just too dangerous.
Yeah, you know, it's an unnecessary risk, I guess. It's a risk that, you know, folks don't feel they need to take. For people who have to go, it's, you know, it's terribly scary for themselves and their families. People are traveling with bodyguards, and even then, it doesn't guarantee that you're not going to get caught in something or you're going to get, you know, kidnapped for ransom.
And are people commuting back and forth across the bridge still?
Mm-hmm. People, you know, if necessity brings them to do that, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So what is the nature of do you have, as an interfaith group, relationships with people in Ciudad Juarez?
I wish I could say that we had, you know, formally we had some relationships with organizations, with congregations over there. As of yet, we don't. You know, I suppose our Border Interfaith name is, you know, the interfaith organization on the border. We would very much love to see it become an organization that transcends that border and bring in congregations. The logistical piece of it is, you know, I think will be pretty hard.
So what's the nature of the work you do on the El Paso side on immigration?
We had, for a period of time, an enforcement policy, unwritten but certainly being practiced by our county sheriff, that was working to make life difficult for undocumented residents of El Paso County, and we worked to change that. We worked to hold our county sheriff accountable for the actions of his deputies who were setting up roadblocks that were, in many cases, skirting and in some cases trampling on the constitutional rights of people.
What did that look like?
That looked like roadblocks being set up in front of schools day after day after day. These roadblocks they call them insurance checkpoints. They're checking the insurance of cars, but amazingly, they didn't always find the need to check late model cars. They didn't always find the need to check cars that had white people in them. And they somehow found the need to start prying into the immigration status of drivers and passengers in the cars, whether or not there had been any issue of insurance, you know, being held by the driver or you know, on the car.
And so in front of schools, that sends a chilling effect on the next generation.
It makes it very difficult for kids to get to school. It makes it difficult for families to remain intact. It was happening in front of churches as well on Sunday morning. And again, just over and over in the same neighborhoods. I mean, if you're looking for insurance
right.
violations, you do them randomly. That's how they work. I mean, I get stopped a couple times a year to check and make sure I'm driving with insurance. It is an issue in El Paso County. We have a lot of uninsured drivers. We have no problem with, you know, looking into that issue. But
it was a thinly veiled way of basically getting at people's immigration status. So what did you do?
So we held an accountability session. That is, we, in the run-up to an election, invited people running for office to come and answer questions and state their positions in front of, it turned out to be about 600 folks at the Methodist Church that's a member of our organization. And they listen to our stories before they get to say what they're all about. And in this case, a woman got up and she told the story of being stopped at this checkpoint and what it felt like. And
was she Mexican, an immigrant woman?
She was a U.S. citizen, but an immigrant from Mexico, yes. And she told her story, and we then asked the question of the candidates, you know, where do you stand on this issue? One candidate was in agreement with most of us that this shouldn't be happening. Another candidate basically said, I support the sheriff in whatever he wants to do. He actually is a fairly flamboyant character. He said, if Sheriff Samaniego wants to strip search these people, that's just fine with me. Whatever the sheriff wants, he can do. You know, and he got, you know, there were hisses and there was, you know, some tension in the room. He was reelected. He was reelected by a thinner margin than ever before. And in the 4 years since that happened, 3 years since that happened, he has become an ally of our organization because we kept after him. We kept after him. We meet with him every couple of months. We've worked with him on issues on which we agree. We agree to disagree about certain things, but we've shown him that we're serious and that we have staying power.
Has he changed his stance on the sheriff can do whatever he wants?
I would imagine he probably hasn't if you ask him, but here's what changed. The sheriff changed. Sadly, the sheriff who was in charge at that time has since passed away, but before he died, he sat down with our organization and listened to some stories, agreed that some of the things that were happening were wrong, and put out to his deputies newer and, you know, clearer understanding of how they're supposed to work and what they can't do. And we had a signing ceremony where he and, I'm sorry, it was already by this point his successor, came and sort of ratified that that understanding. No checkpoints in front of schools, no checkpoints in front of churches, no asking for Social Security cards of passengers in the car, no asking for Social Security cards of the driver unless they have no other form of ID on them, and so forth. Ratified it in front of folks in the community at the church, started to build some trust between the deputies and the community, trust that had been eroded. And then in the most recent election, the candidates, the two candidates who were running against each other, were very clearly divided on that issue, and the candidate who won and is now our sheriff has always embraced our philosophy of how a community should be policed. So you can call that a pretty good victory, and it started with this, you know, with this difficult issue, with this woman getting up and telling her story in front of 600 people, and then with a lot of, you know, tending to the relationships between the organization and our elected officials.
We're talking to Rabbi Larry Bach. So you are here to teach a workshop. It'll be, well, there'll be something tonight, something tomorrow. We'll give a phone number where people can call for more information. But what do you hope to bring to Santa Fe?
Santa Fe, as I understand it, has been exploring the possibility of doing this kind of community organizing and forming this kind of organization here for a couple of years. And Temple Beth Shalom has brought in over the past 2 years two of my mentors in this work, Rabbi David Saperstein and Rabbi Jonah Pesner. And they've reached a point in their work where they want to hear from a rabbi in the field who has had some success and to kind of see what it looks like in a congregation. Our congregation is a similar size, has, you know, some of the same issues culturally, is in a similar part of the country. And so from what I gather, they spoke with the folks who had come before, with Rabbi Saperstein and Rabbi Pesner, and decided that I would be a good match, and they invited me up. So what I want to do is talk, you know, more in depth about some of the things we've been speaking about in the last few minutes, and go into some detail about the nuts and bolts of it with the congregation. How do you make it work? How do you build support in the congregation for an effort that some people will paint as being, you know, overly political, or having a partisan agenda? How do you present this work for what it really is, which is building community and transcending those lines of race or of economic class or of religion that tend to divide us but really shouldn't?
Do you ever get any flack from people in your congregation who say, look, this isn't a political organization, this is a church, this is a temple?
When we were first getting going, absolutely. Over time, I think people have come to see that the walls didn't fall down, that we're still a strong congregation, that in fact, being involved in this work has strengthened our congregation. People have come to the congregation because of this work. I'm getting ready to welcome a new president of the congregation next month, who was a less active member 7 or 8 years ago. And it was Border Interfaith that got him re-engaged with Jewish life as an adult. He was, I would say, I don't want to say a spectator, but he certainly wasn't an active leader in the congregation. Because of this work, his passion for social justice kind of conspired with his passion for Judaism, and here he is now getting ready to, you know, take the reins as president of the congregation.
How did those two things link up in terms of scripture and Jewish principles, social justice and Judaism?
The way I read the scriptures, social justice and Judaism are the same thing. I can't imagine any aspect of Judaism that doesn't have a strong social justice component. You know, we're getting ready to celebrate Passover in a few weeks. I mean, that is the ultimate holiday of migration. And then once you've arrived and you've made it, caring for the people who haven't yet made it. You know, we're commanded again and again and again, do not oppress the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Do not abhor the Egyptian. Remember what he did to you, and then, you know, just what you wouldn't expect, so don't abhor him. For me, Judaism and social justice are synonyms.
If people would like to find out more about what's going on, they can call Temple Beth Shalom. Rabbi Larry Bach, thank you so much for being with us here
My pleasure.
The Radio Cafe. We're going to take a break right now. Please stay tuned to KSFR.